I said, you know, Gary, I said, those guys are up inside that kiln, and it's got a lot of nickel in it and cadmium and all that other stuff. And I said, somebody's going to get bad, sick, or die from it. And I said, there was a guy that died out there at that construction company. And he said, well, you got to die of something, Ralph. And I didn't like that comment. Until one day, we had a young man about 22 years old, and they had to take him to the hospital with heart palpitations. KL4NUE0TR.
My dad retired from Hearst. He didn't like sitting around the house, so he got approached by the supervisor down here at the rock quarry down here at Inman, right down there off of forget the name of the road there. Backside of Inman. They got a rock quarry there. And he called one day, said, you got to come over here and look at this. So I went down there and looked, and they've got a big rock crusher there that takes these tapered domes, and there's a big shaft in the center of it that rotates, you know, on a obtuse axis, and it crushes the stone as it passes through that funnel. But I don't know what those domes are made out, but that stuff is hard. My gosh, it's so hard. But what he wanted me to look at was those dump trucks they got down there. And one of the dump trucks, the bed, these coming up the quarry there, and the beds fell off of the truck. You know, bed's laying down in the quarry, and the truck's, you know, up on the ramp. And, you know, supervisor was, you know, they had to go down there and get it back on.
Fair Mountain Road.
And that supervisor was telling me that the beds are designed to break away from the truck, to keep from, you know, pulling the bed, pulling the truck down into the quarry and all. But I never seen anything like that. I mean, it just, you know, got breakaway joints on it. So it, you know, the bed would fall off of it without, I guess, taking the driver with it. But just kind of strange.
And there, was that you, Chris?
For India, Yankee India. That was Little Mountain Road that he was talking about.
Pick her up, Chad.
And no, it wasn't Little Mountain. It's, I cannot think of the road. It's on the Inman, in Bowling Springs Inman side, not the one at Little Mountain. I forget the name of the road. But anyway, 292. But the other thing is they have a pontoon, big pontoon platform down there that they suck the water out of the quarry with. And it goes 150 feet, 6-inch line, pumps that water 150 feet straight up. And when they blast down there, they don't pull the pontoon out. They just leave it in the pond. And he's constantly down there having to weld that thing back up where the rock has just, I mean, it's just destroyed it. I mean, just you wouldn't believe the holes and the stuff down there. They, you know, when they tear it up, they blow it up. They'll go down there and patch it up, and, you know. It's just weird how that stuff, how they run a mine. I don't see how they stay in business.
Built mine power equipment for years. I've hooked up more weed egg coal dryers. I guess we bought the patent or something from Germany. I used to have to hook those up and the coal feeders up and all of that stuff, Chad. And I did a lot of work on coal mining stuff for years and years and years, and then I wired the panel boxes for them along with other guys for if I get off 3:30, I go down to the other plant and wire panel boxes that were 10 foot high and, oh, I don't know, 4 foot deep. It was general purpose control, relaying and stuff then, and some CCTV and stuff like that, where one guy could run the whole coal mine from that point. But I wired those. Everything was square bins. The only other place I ever seen that done is on that French 27-foot boring mill I worked on, and it was solid wire. Everything in the control panel that you operated it from, and everything back in the main panel that had to do anything with that Sweetie sample of dying generating set was square bins. And you know how, if you ever worked very much, if you got vibration, you got solid wire. That's the reason they use stranded now. Solid wire is going to break. It might take it 20 or 30 years, but it'll break. And we used Volkeen. It was stranded, and it no problems there. But the other thing I was thinking of that was toxic around, and you know what, might warn you, son, you got to be careful. I think it was aluminum bronze. Am I right about that?
I believe that's what it's called. It's an aluminum bronze. Yeah, it's pretty toxic. Sertanium. There's another one. Silicone. It's a silicone alloy bronze. I forget the name of it, but you know, nowadays when you go to a welding shop or the supply house or a metal shop, they'll give you MSDS with the material, and especially titanium. It's you look at the MSDS on a piece of titanium. That's pretty dangerous, you know, especially when you're standing over a machine cutting it, and you know welding on it or machining it, you know. You know, it gives suggestions on, you know, what to do with the coolant, even when, you know, the coolant keeps that stuff cool. You got to handle the coolant a certain way because of, you know, the nastiness in it when you get done with it.
Now, you know, the Russians used that in their Typhoon submarines and I think one other model. They could go deeper. They had a double hull. And it was lighter and it was stronger, but the bad part was it was very, very, very expensive, and so they quit doing that. But I was reading the other day where that new class of submarines were coming out with, and I can't remember what it was. The newest one, I think right now, is the Sea Wolf. It's going to be about $5.5 billion a copy.
Goodness gracious. One year, Tom, I went to Virginia Beach. They had a dry dock of some sort. There was a submarine there. And they had a, the submarine was out of the water, and they had a, special kind of tarp over the propeller, and I was asking one of the guys there worked at the dock, why's the tarp over the propeller? And I had no idea that a propeller was that sensitive, you know, as far as being classified and all. But why is that? What's the big deal about a prop?
Noise. I couldn't say these things years ago, Chad, but, you know, we had to know every class of submarine in the world and every propulsion plant in my job as an anti-submarine warfare operator. We had to know the propulsion systems, the auxiliary propulsion systems, the number of blades, yada, 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 without going into it deeply. But you had to have secret clearance. It wasn't top secret, but it was secret. And that prop, if you ever noticed in any of the launching ceremonies, you'll never see it. And the newest one there was if you watch carefully in any movies you might watch, it's a 7-blade J-blade. In the old days, like the Russian whiskey submarine and that, and the real old ones, they had 4 blades. And actually, I could hear that, you know, like that. Well, you don't hear a J-blade, and you don't see a J-blade. But that ain't the newest. The newest is sort of like for Red October had, and they called it a caterpillar. But there's actually things out there very similar to that. And then they use thrusters now, kind of like these Skidoos, I'm told, and don't even have propellers yet.
Oh, the reason they're sensitive in nature is because the signature can identify probably how close it is, and probably what it is. So if you can keep that silent, then you've got the advantage. Is that correct?
You could hear and visualize very, very many parameters from the sonobuoys we dropped in the water from the airplane. They had an antenna would come up, and the hydrophone would go down 600 feet. And then it would transmit an acoustical signature up to you. Now, I can say this now, but years ago I'd have been court-martialed for it. We couldn't say the word Jezebel, and that's what it was called back then. But you know, I'm talking back in the 60s. And they would cover those recorders up at air shows and stuff. And they had grams on them, and we had memorize those grams. Well, nowadays, you know, they can just, let's say you took one of our submarines secretly over and waited at Vladivostok for one of their newest submarines to come out. You record that, you blow it into an EEPROM, and the next thing you know, if you ever watched the hunt for, have you watched the hunt for Red October?
I have.
That black gentleman that was sitting there, and he was looking at the screen with all these squiggles on it, only it was a CRT there. It'd be an LCD now. Ours was on paper, but that's the acoustical signature, and he was telling the captain, this is an Akula-class Russian submarine, which was one of the newer ones at the time. And he's burying so-and-so, and he's going so fast, and yada, yada, yada. And he's telling the captain that. Well, that was my job, only I told the pilot that, the tactical coordinator, which was on the carrier plane. He was the co-pilot, and he had an airborne integrated display system that he could display this on. You know, on the P-3s, it would have been the tactical coordinator, which was an individual officer that took all this information and decided how to kill that sucker.
NUE with N0TR. Well, that's fascinating stuff, man. I don't guess I ever really thought about that, you know. I guess you do everything you got to do to get the advantage, I guess. But I had no idea that much went into a prop. But I mean, I get it now that you think about it. You know, you're that deep, you don't, you know, can't really hear, I mean, can't see anything, so you have to rely on instrumentation or sound. But I do know sound travels pretty good underwater. But I didn't know that it was all that involved, I guess. But, you know, I'm not a Navy guy either. But at any rate, well, Tom, I've enjoyed the conversation, bud, but I'm starting to show my tired a little bit. And I'm on say 73s, and I'll clear out on your final. Please tell Miss Bernice I said hello, and y'all have a wonderful night. KO4NUE, I'm clear, Tom.
Say that. She's asleep over here. That's she might have heard you. She's smiling now. Shoot. Sound travels at 4,800 feet a second underwater, four times faster than it does in air, Chad. And that's why they call the Navy guys silent service. And I've been around a lot of them and friends, and I would ask them questions. You know, I said, well, I've seen you guys underwater at 34 knots. Is that true? They just kind of smile at you, and they never, never answer you. And I was just fishing, you know. And nowadays, those things are quite fast. But that's why they call them the silent service. Some of those submarines are, near 546 feet long, Chad, and various weights, whether they're hunter killer subs or ballistic missile subs or now cruise missile subs. And they run, you take a ballistic missile sub, and it'll go out there, and when he pulled the plug out of Point Loma in San Diego, you wouldn't see him until 3 months later, and he come up in that exact same spot. And nobody ever knew where they were at. And once they got to their operating area, they're at about 5-6 knots, really, really slow, and they would have 3,000 miles of water or so around them, just guessing, where nobody in the world knew where they were at, and they had more firepower than was used in all of World War II on one of those subs. That'll give you an idea of why they're kind of secretive. Been a pleasure, Chad. You have a good night, and I better get upstairs. Bernice is going to slap me around. KO4NUE, say hi, Diana. This is N0TR73.
India, Yankee, India, Mobile.